Gopi Jana Balaba Givarid Hari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading this morning from the 18th chapter, first canto, text 48. And we will read about six verses, including the purports, and then we'll go back and focus on the first verse of the series. Okay. So let's read the translations, please. Who would like to start? Preacher Money? Text 48, translation and purport, and just keep passing around.
The devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even though they are defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even killed, they are never inclined to avenge themselves.
Just the verses?
Purports.
Rishi Shamika also knew that the Lord does not forgive a person who has committed an offense at the feet of a devotee. The Lord can only give direction to take shelter of the devotee. He thought within himself that if Maharaj Parikshit would counter curse the boy, he might be saved. But he knew also that a pure devotee is callous about worldly advantages and reverses. As such, the devotees are never inclined to counteract personal defamation, curses, negligence, etc. As far as such things are concerned, in personal affairs the devotees do not care for them. But in a case of their being performed against the Lord and in His devotees, then the devotees take very strong action. It was a personal affair, and therefore Shamika Rishi knew that the king would not take counteraction. Thus, there was no alternative than to place an appeal to the Lord for the immature boy. It is not that only the brahmanas are powerful enough to award curses or blessings upon the subordinates. The devotee of the Lord, even though he might not be a brahmana, is more powerful than a brahman. But a powerful devotee never misuses the power for personal benefit. Whatever power the devotee may have is always utilized in service towards the Lord and his devotees only.
Okay. All right, so there are three personalities involved in this pastime: the king, the sage, and the sage's son. So the king and the sage are in these verses being appreciated for their tolerant attitude. All right. Any questions on this purport? We'll come and discuss more. But if you have a question, anyone. All right. Next verse, then, please.
The sage thus regretted the sin committed by his own son. He did not take the insult paid by the king very seriously. Purport. The whole incident is now cleared up. Maharaj Parikshit's garlanding the sage with a dead snake was not at all a very serious offense, but Sringi's cursing the king was a serious offense. The serious offense was committed by a foolish child only. Therefore, he deserved to be pardoned by the Supreme Lord, although it was not possible to get free from the sinful reaction. Maharaj Parikshit also did not mind the curse offered to him by a foolish brahmana. On the contrary, he took full advantage of the awkward situation, and by the great will of the Lord, Maharaj Parikshit achieved the highest perfection of life through the grace of Srila Shukadeva Goswami. Actually, it was the desire of the Lord, and Maharaj Parikshit, Rishi Shamika, and his son Sringi were all instrumental in fulfilling the desire of the Lord. So none of them were put into difficulty because everything was done in relation with the Supreme Lord, Supreme Person.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Last verse. Yes. He will by the time we finish these next few verses.
Text 15. Mm-hmm. Generally, the transcendentalist, even though engaged by others in the dualities of the material world, are not distressed. Nor do they take pleasure in worldly things, for they are transcendentally engaged.
The transcendentalists are the empiric philosophers, the mystics and the devotees of the Lord. Empiric philosophers aim at the perfection of merging into the being of the Absolute. Mystics aim at perceiving the all-pervading Super Soul. And the devotees of the Lord are engaged in the transcendental love and service of the personality of Godhead. Since Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan are different phases of the same transcendence, all these transcendentalists are beyond the three modes of material nature. Material distresses and happinesses are produced by the three modes, and therefore the causes of such material distresses and happiness have nothing to do with the transcendentalist. The king was a devotee and the rishi was a mystic. Therefore, both of them were unattached to the accidental incident created by the supreme will. The playful child was an instrument in fulfilling the Lord's will.
Mm-hmm. And thus in the purports, Bhaktivinoda purports to chapter 18 of the first canto. Maharaj Parikshit cursed by a Brahmin boy. Any questions or comments on that purport? Yes, Prabhu? Yes. That's because of the power of the Brahmins. For the Brahmin to curse the king was a misuse of his power, because the Brahmins were actually dependent on the kings for protection. And especially in this case, this king was sinless. So he overreacted, and that was a very serious offense. Okay? Yes.
He was justified in doing, because he wasn't received properly. Mm-hmm. This is all on the level of Dharma. You have to remember that. There's always different levels going on here. So the king, it was no... So therefore, the sage didn't take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. He should have. The sage actually felt remiss. I should have given him a proper greeting.
Whereas Sringi was actually, in the wrong. Overarching thing, he was part of the Leela, but he actually did the wrong. He perfectly did the wrong thing.
Okay, let's move on to chapter 19, text 1. Who's next to read? Translation, please.
Sri Suta Goswami said, while returning home, the king Maharaj Parikshit felt that the act he had committed against the faultless and powerful Brahman was heinous and uncivilized. Consequently, he was distressed. The pious king regretted his accidental improper treatment of the powerful Brahman, who was faultless. Such repentance is natural for a good man like the king, and such repentance delivers a devotee from all kinds of sins accidentally committed. The devotees are naturally faultless. Accidental sins committed by a devotee are sincerely regretted, and by the grace of the Lord, all sins unwillingly committed by a devotee are burnt in the fire of repentance.
I see this very important point. Even though he was faultless, he was not defensive. He took responsibility and felt bad. So all the sinful reactions are burned in the fire of repentance. What a beautiful sentence. If one has genuine remorse, then the results of a misdeed can be counteracted. But if there's no remorse, that's actually the sign of a sociopath, a person who can do something, hurt other people, and feel no remorse about it whatsoever. They're completely justified in time. This is the basis of criminal activity, right? Criminologists. Okay, next. Any other comments? Yes, Steph. this applies for everybody. Okay? And we need the mic back for the minute.
This is why they deem that fellow who blew all those people away in Finland crazy. If he had absolutely no remorse, he would have done it again.
Huh. Isn't it sweet?
This guy who killed all these people in Finland, is it Norway?
Norway.
Norway. Who he said he'd do it again.
Children. Please.
King Pariksit thought, due to my neglecting the injunctions of the Supreme Lord, I must certainly expect some difficulty to overcome me in the near future. I now desire, without reservation, that the calamity come now, for in this way I may be freed of the sinful action and not commit such anything. The Supreme Lord enjoins that brahmanas and cows must be given all protection. The Lord is himself very much inclined to do good to brahmanas and cows. O brahmana, acknowledge. Maharaj Pariksit knew all this, and thus he concluded that his insulting a powerful brahman was certainly to be punished by the laws of the Lord. And he was expecting something very difficult in the very near future. He therefore desired the imminent calamity to fall on him, and not on his family members. Man's personal misconduct affects all his family members. Therefore, Maharaj Pariksit desired the calamity to fall on him alone. By suffering personally, he would be restrained from future sins, and at the same time, the sin which he had committed would be counteracted so that his descendants would not suffer. That is the way a responsible devotee thinks. The family members of a devotee also share the effects of a devotee's service unto the Lord. Maharaj Prahlad saved his demon father by his personal devotional service. A devotee son and the family is the greatest boon or blessing of the Lord.
Does this remind anyone of a pastime from Krishna book? This translation? What's it? Well, from the Krishna book. About King Riga. He committed this very slight offense, like completely accidentally. He gave away thousands and thousands of cows daily, practically, and one cow strayed from one Brahmin's herd to another. So, or back to his home herd, I guess, and then the king gave him away again. So the first Brahmin came demanding, "Where's my cow?" And the one he had given it to said, "He gave it to me. It's mine." And so the king saw it was coming and said, "I'll give you both 10,000 cows of your face." No. Again, this was Leela. But then he was given the choice, because he had executed so many pious activities, he was given the choice of experiencing the results of his pious activities first or his sin first. So he accepted the sinful reaction first, which was to, yeah, become a lizard. Okay, so yes, Richard is saying, "I will accept. Please let me have this now, and let me receive it fully. Let it not affect my family." This is the great piety. Right, next. Anything else on that? And then this is our last verse for the day.
I am uncivilized and sinful due to my neglect of Brahminical culture, God consciousness, and cow protection. Therefore, I wish that my kingdom, strength, and riches burn up immediately by the fire of the Brahmana's wrath, so that in the future I may not be guided by such inauspicious attitudes. Progressive human civilization is based on Brahminical culture, God consciousness, and protection of cows. All economic development of the state by trade, commerce, agriculture, and industries must be fully utilized in relation to the above principles, otherwise all so-called economic development becomes a source of degradation. Cow protection means feeding the Brahminical culture, which leads towards God consciousness, and thus perfection of human civilization is achieved. The age of Kali aims at killing the higher principles of life, and although Maharaj Parikshit strongly resisted the domination of the personality of Kali within the world, the influence of the age of Kali came at an opportune moment, and even a strong king like Maharaj Parikshit was induced to disregard the Brahminical culture due to a slight provocation of hunger and thirst. Maharaj Parikshit lamented the accidental incident, and he desired that all his kingdom, strength, and accumulation of wealth would be burned up for not being engaged in Brahminical culture, etc. Where wealth and strength are not engaged in the advancement of Brahminical culture, God consciousness and cow protection, the state and home are surely doomed by providence. If we want peace and prosperity in the world, we should take lessons from this verse. Every state and every home must endeavor to advance the cause of Brahminical culture for self-purification, God consciousness for self-realization, and cow protection for getting sufficient milk and the best food to continue a perfect civilization.
Very instructive, isn't it? How Maharaj Parikshit immediately puts all the blame upon himself and with great conviction says, I am uncivilized and sinful due to my neglect of Brahminical culture, God consciousness, and cow protection, all because he got upset with his sage briefly. Therefore, I wish that my kingdom, strength, and riches burn up immediately by the fire of the Brahmin's wrath, so that in the future I may not be guided by such inauspicious attitudes. And so he's saying, I made a terrible mistake. Let my entire life be destroyed to compensate for it. And this is his reaction. So as soon as we feel like I have been wronged, I am entitled, like this is the false ego, the mode of passion affecting us. You can see that a spotlessly pure devotee like Maharaj Parikshit has none of this. Immediately accepts it all, and he responds in a way which is completely empowering. See, it's very disempowering to say I'm entitled to this. You have wronged me. That the only reaction that gets is it makes other people very defensive as well. No, you have wronged me. This is the influence of Kali Yuga. You know, everybody is saying that they have rights and they have been mistreated and dissed. So Maharaj Parikshit shows what is the actual response of the devotee. Does this remind you of a previous pastime we've recently read? Concerning Maharaj Parikshit, just a couple of chapters back. Yes, when Maharaj Parikshit is seeing Dharma in the shape of a bull, and he's being beaten by Kali right there and then, he says to the bull, who is doing this to you? Not a very brilliant question if you were a forensic investigator, right? If you were a law enforcement officer. Obviously this person is doing it, but he was testing. And the bull's response is, well, some people say that you suffer because of destiny, and some people say you suffer because of your own sinful reactions, and other people say that you cannot ascertain the cause of suffering. In light of all that, who do you think is beating you? And so then Maharaj Parikshit said, you refuse to accuse the person who is the agent of your karma, therefore you are certainly religion personified. And this is the practical thing that we can experience. If we are mad at somebody, it gets us locked in this tension where we can't stop thinking about them. And we certainly don't want to die. Do we want to die in the consciousness of thinking about some jerk? You know? Right. Like, you know that story of the Brahmin and the prostitute? They were neighbors, and the prostitute was regularly having customers come to her home, and the Brahmin was thinking, oh, she's so sinful. And so he decided, I'm going to track her sinful activity. So every time a customer would come, he would take a rock and put it between his house and hers. And that way he built a whole wall. And he died looking at that wall, thinking of all the sins of the prostitute. And the prostitute also died looking at that wall, thinking, oh, I'm so sinful. And so she was elevated and he went to hell. So we are locked in this ego battle. You've done me wrong. No, you've done me wrong. This is very unfortunate for us. So we're thinking we can hurt the other person, but in fact we're only hurting ourselves. So Maharaj Pariksit knows this, therefore he says, yes, I have sinned in a major way. Let all of my riches, my strength, and my kingdom be taken away. In this way, I won't make this horrible mistake again in the future. So you see the difference. Yes? It is his intelligence. It's not just Leela. It's the Lord arranges awkward situations so that the qualities of the devotees can become glorified. We're going to read more about that in just a minute. Respond in a humble way, but here this is clearly from his heart. I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes. Okay, that's the main topic of the class. Yes. They are synonymous. They can't separate one from the other. So by offending one, the Brahminical culture is also offending these other considerations. In other words, there's no question of Brahminical culture where cows are not protected. And there's no question of cow protection where Brahminical culture is not respected. All right. Yes, Dr. Prabhu, would you like to add to that? Okay, let's go back, please, to verse 48. This is really a wonderful verse. We're going to study in a little bit more depth. 1848. Tiraskrita vipralabdha Shapta kshita hata api Nasyatat Pratikurvanti Tad Bhakta Kabavotihi Tiraskrita Vipralabha Shapta Kshita Hata Api Nasyatat Pratikurvanti Tadbhakta prabhavo pihi. Please chant. Tirikshkita vipralabdha. Tirikshkita hata api. Nasyata tadbhikurvanti. Nacchata kabhavo pihi Tiraskrita vipralabdha Shabda kshita tata api Nasyata pratipurvanti Tachata prabhavo pihi Tiraskrita vipralabdha Shapta kshita hata api Nasyata tvati purvanti Tadbhakta prabhavo pihi. Let's read the synonyms together, please. tirakrita, being defamed, vipralabdha, being cheated, shaptaha, being cursed, shipta, disturbed by negligence, hata, or even being killed, api, also, na, never, asya, for all these acts, tat, them, prabhakurvanti, counteract, tat, the lords, bhukta, devotees, prabhava, powerful, api, although, he, certainly. Translation: the devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even though they are defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even killed, they are never inclined to avenge themselves. So again, we read this purport. I'm going to look a little more deeply at that. Prabhupada says, as far as such things are concerned in personal affairs, the devotees do not care for them, but in case of their being performed against the Lord or his devotees, then the devotees take very strong action. So that is the distinction and discrimination that one has to have. Is this a matter of my false ego, or is it a matter of Krishna's service? So it's not that devotee means being a doormat. Anyone can take advantage of us. But if we are personally insulted, that means we're affected by false ego. So Hamlet in Shakespeare says, to be or not to be, that is the question. Whether it is better to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous, nobler in the mind. Just please quote the slokas. Yes. I just wanted to get the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune part. Sorry. So he's questioning, is it better to bear all of this trouble in my life or to commit suicide? Right? He doesn't know, not Janadipa, that yes, you cannot kill the soul. Never was there a time, nor I, nor all these kings, including Hamlet. So, even if he tried to kill himself, there would be no escape. But he didn't know that. Shakespeare did not know that, unfortunately. So he didn't include that in his poetic expressions. But he was on the verge of suicide because of the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. He would rather end it all than deal with, or he was contemplating, should I end it all rather than try to deal with these things? So this is the perennial question. Forbearance means, of course, to voluntarily suffer or to endure the suffering. So, as we were discussing, we can artificially tolerate. I'm tolerating you, Prabhu. Or we can genuinely tolerate, which means that I deserve all of this and more, and feeling that from the core of our heart. So that is a very advanced stage of Krishna consciousness. It can't be imitated. But at least we should know that is the direction in which we are going. So what is the difference between somebody who's artificially tolerating and who is genuinely repentant and feels responsibility? Well, in short, I would like to offer that it is love that makes that difference. And considering this subject, I naturally think about my children, because nobody makes you more forbearing than your children. In the earlier chapter, in the 12th chapter, we were reading about the horoscope of Maharaj Parikshit, remember? So in that chapter, the astrologer said, he will be as forbearing as what? Anyone remember? Tree is often used as an example, but in this case, another commonly used example. What? The mountain, even you're getting warmer. As the earth, yes. As forbearing as the earth. So just think about it. Every day, so many people, yeah, we're trampling on it, we're driving on it, we are digging in it, we are blowing it up, we're drilling it for water or oil or minerals or whatever. and the earth is still there, just taking it. So there's a pious Hindu prayer that that Hindus sometimes will recite before getting out of bed in the morning. They will pray to the earth, please forgive me for putting my feet on you today. You know, so this is a very nice sentiment. You know, we do so much, we depend on the earth so much, and take it so much for granted. Therefore, the earth is the emblem of forbearance, one emblem of forbearance. And another is, as mentioned, the tree. Right? The tree will be drying up and dying of thirst, and yet will not ask anyone for water. This example is given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Even though there's so much need, he won't beg. See? So this is forbearance, the forbearance of a tree. Not that my problem becomes everybody's problem and it's your responsibility to fix it. You know? This is the example. This is the opposite of forbearance. Rather, I have a problem. I'm not even going to tell anybody that I have this problem. because it is mine to suffer. I'm entitled to this suffering. I have earned this suffering. And if I'm taking it voluntarily without protest, that is forbearance. Right? So, to be forbearing, in short, means to voluntarily accept suffering. It is similar to austerity in that respect. Austerity means to voluntarily undergo suffering for the sake of spiritual advancement. Forbearance means to voluntarily undergo suffering because of accepting responsibility and not wanting to burden others with it. Okay? And that can really only be done when you love other people so much that you would rather take the trouble yourself than trouble them. So if you are ever blessed to have children, those of you who have not, it's only Sureshwar Prabhu and I, right? Getting close. But he's getting close to the fun stage. It's... then forbearance becomes more understandable. See, the relationship between children and parents is a very complex one in this, especially in this society in the West, where the parents will have this great affection for the child, which is natural, and the child will feel great shelter from the parents, which is natural. But then there is such almost a socially ingrained lack of respect that comes at certain ages in the child, that they will no longer have the respect for the parent, but the parent will not lose the affection for the child. So thus the parent is put in the position to be very forbearing, have to endure a lot of abuse from the child. But because of their love, they will continue to do everything in their power for the betterment of that child. They won't reject the child. Almost never will the parent reject the child. As one writer put it, as a parent, you never get a call from your child except when they are asking you for a down payment on a house that is much nicer than the one you live in. So there's a story about this from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, about King Chitraketu. Chitraketu had everything. He had great opulence, powerful. He was a powerful Kshatriya, he had great kingdom, beautiful wives, but somehow none of his wives could give him a son. So he was wanting this more than anything, this one thing that he didn't have. So when some sages came visiting the kingdom, he said, could you please bless me that I could have a child? Now, he should have asked them, could you please enlighten me in Krishna consciousness? But instead he asked them for this benediction of a child. So they said, we can do this, but we warn you that this will be a child that will bring you happiness and distress. So the king was thinking, okay, when he becomes a teenager, he'll be a little rebellious. So I can handle that. So he accepted the child on this condition. So, of course, what happened is one of his wives became pregnant and gave birth to a son who was the joy of the king's life. The father and mother were always celebrating the child. The kingdom was celebrating the child. Everyone was celebrating the child except the co-wives who did not have children. He suddenly felt dissed. And so they were so dissed that they poisoned the child. And when the king found his child dead, he was overwhelmed with lamentation. So again, the sages returned at this time. And they said, well, we can bring your child back to life. And they did. So the king was astonished. And the child looked, stood up in his crib. And the king said, my dear son, don't you recognize me? I'm your father. And he said, which father are you? I've had so many fathers. So the soul was again in this body, but not attached to this particular body. So in this way, the king gained valuable lessons and became self-realized. And he got from the sages what he should have asked for in the first place, but did not have the presence of mind to do. So this is the compassion of the devotee, that even if somebody doesn't know the right thing to ask, the devotee will give them what they need. So you see this sometimes when Srila Prabhupada would be in a press conference or something, and some reporter would ask a superficial question like, what branch of Buddhism are you? So to which Prabhupada would reply, give the person what he needs. He said, we have nothing to do with this or that ism. We are here to teach you what you've forgotten. There's some very strong statement like that. So the reporter came to get a story, but he got a very compassionate connection with somebody who probably loved him more than anyone ever had since his parents. So Chitraketu Maharaj, having become enlightened, then proceeded to go on a traveling sankirtan throughout the universe in a celestial plane / mansion and fly from place to place performing Harinam. And at one time they were flying over the planet of Lord Shiva, Kailash, and he looked down and saw Lord Shiva giving Srimad Bhagavatam class with his wife sitting in his lap. So like us, Chitraketu Maharaj found this very amusing. So he laughed. Nanda Kumar Prabhu will demonstrate this next semester. So Lord Shiva, being a great Vaishnava, was not at all offended by the laughter of King Chitraketu. But Parvati, his wife, was very offended. How can you laugh at my husband this way? I curse you to become a demon. And then, hearing this curse, Maharaj Chitraketu landed his celestial airplane, got off and offered his respects, and got back on the plane and left. So then Parvati asked Lord Shiva, why didn't he try to negotiate out of this curse? You know, why didn't he try to counteract it or ask for some relief? To which Lord Shiva replied a very famous verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Narayana Parak Sarve Na Hutas Chena Vidyati Swarga Pavarga Narakeshu Na Tulasya Madarpanu. The devotees of the Lord are so forbearing and so tolerant that they will not care if they're in heaven or hell. Whether they're in heaven or hell, they'll continue glorifying Krishna, because that is their real pleasure in life. So parenthood can really teach us a great many lessons of forbearance and tolerance. You can never stop loving your child, even when they do things that are very disrespectful, when they break your heart by doing things which you have tried your whole life to teach them not to do. See? And when they disgrace you, when they do things that are self-destructive, when they have problems that make you feel like you have messed them up, you know, What else? What am I leaving off the list, Sureshwar Prabhu? So, still, we never forget we will never fail to tolerate. A parent will never fail to tolerate the child and act in their interest because this is forbearance. So this is one of the great advantages of Grihastha life. You get to learn these very valuable lessons that are more difficult, in one sense, for sannyasis, for renunciates to experience. This is why, actually, the Vedic culture is built around renunciates coming after going through these lower ashrams to gain all of these practical experiences and then be able to share them, their realizations. To come to the end and the point of saying, now I'm giving all of this up. And on that basis, teach. So we did not have that luxury in ISKCON. And Prabhupada gave sannyas to very young men who had less experience. And they have learned vicariously, those great souls who have basically renounced their whole life for the mission. And it's not that they don't understand these things. They do understand, but they learn through the experiences of others. So that's a more intelligent way to learn something. But for most, it is necessary to learn by our own experiences. So this is the difference between artificial forbearance and real forbearance. That is love. If we really love other people, then we'll naturally be forbearing. And when we feel some lesser feeling towards other people, then we will be unable to tolerate them from the heart. Okay?
Family, like, let's say there's random people insulting you, then where can the love come from?
Wait a minute, what was that again?
I said random people insulting you, where will the love come from? Because like you hardly know this person, and then there is normally, sometimes there is tension. Like, where is the question of love? Like,
well, I missed your question. You're defining family as a random group of people.
No, not family. I'm saying it's not family. Sorry, bro. I'm saying like if you don't have strong relationships with someone.
I see.
And then tension happens, and how can we love that person? It's too much. Like, it's just at our stage at least.
Right. How can we love somebody? It's one thing to have family members with whom we have long-standing relationships and feel love for them. But what about other people? Right. This is our gradual progression of spiritual life. Vidyabhinaya sampanni gamani gavihashtini suni chaiva svapakircha pandita samadarshini. As we progress, we will see others as spirit souls, as valued parts and parcels of the Lord. And Prabhupada gives this nice example. You know, we use this phrase, part and parcel. So part and parcel is, it's not like UPS, where you fill up your truck with parcels every day and get rid of them as fast as possible. Part and parcel means, he gives the example of the finger, is part and parcel of the body. So this is the relationship between the soul and God. It's that intimate, you know. Just like we can feel every fiber of our finger, every nuance, every surface. And if there is some pain on the finger, then it can affect our whole being. I remember a few years ago, Hridayananda Maharaj accidentally slammed a car door on some finger. And remember that? Yeah, so it was a major event. In his life, I mean, he had so much pain and so many trips to the doctor, etc., etc. So, every single living entity is that important to Krishna. When we realize that, then we will feel compassion for others. And to the extent that we're unable to see that, then we'll feel affected by our false ego. So if we are affected by our false ego, and if we're not there yet, right, then we need to at least know how to behave properly. This is part of sadhana. Like, for example, we read this morning, the first offense to the holy name is to blaspheme devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. This is a major offense. So, if we are thinking ill of another devotee, or we feel that we have been wronged by another devotee, one thing to avoid is to react on the spot. We have to at least have that much self-control and clamp it and say, let's talk about this later. Okay? Before, because once words are released, it's very hard to retract them. They cannot be retracted. Like even the Brahmastra weapon, the nuclear weapon, could be retracted by mantra. But a word, once it's spoken, you know, it's hard to bring back. You have to speak many, many more words to try to counteract the effect of that one word. So speaking in anger is stupid. And writing in anger is industrial strength stupid. So, you know, you can write in anger and then just immediately go to the delete button. Right? You get it out that way. Or you can, the dati pratikana, you can, is that it? You can dispose your mind. Guyam akyati prichati. Guyam akyati prichati. You can disclose your mind in confidence to a friend. I am really feeling upset about this. These are good ways to respond if we don't have the forbearance of Maharaj Parikshit. So, to respond with intelligence. So first thing, don't say anything that you'll regret. And secondly, talk to somebody, but in confidence. Not that we put it on this person's Facebook wall. You're a jerk. So in that way, we can bridge the gap from where we are to where we want to be, at least to some extent. At least we can behave in the proper way. Just like paying obeisances, Prabhupada was asked, what if I don't feel like paying obeisances? To which he responded, do them anyway, then you'll feel like it. So, yes, Olivia?
Same kind of question, like, how can we be tolerant and forbearing in a situation like that? And I asked Mother Chaitanya, actually, like how you said, like to approach someone, share your mind. So I was like asking, like I wanted, like I wasn't having so much of a problem doing it outwardly, externally it was okay. But I never liked that conflict between, like I always liked the way I'm acting externally to be exactly a reflection of like what's going on internally. So I was saying, like, how can I internally feel tolerant and forbearing, you know, and have the way I'm acting be, you know, the truth of how I'm feeling. And she was explaining to me how by seeing things in the modes of nature, as the modes of nature, that I can actually be compassionate to someone. So if, like, someone is doing something that bothers you or anything, and you're feeling like, oh, I should be tolerant, I need to be forbearing, then realizing that perhaps like it could be your false ego if it's like a personal thing, but if it's just something that has nothing to do with yourself, then it's just like one of the modes of nature, and to actually be compassionate and see like the mode of nature. It's not them doing that, but it's actually the mode of passion, why they're behaving like that, or the mode of ignorance, why they're behaving like that. Similarly, for ourselves, you know, like we can be tolerant, forbearing for ourselves when we do something and not beat ourselves up and realize, oh, it's the mode of nature, you know, I need to chant, I need to hear, I need to, you know, become more, you know, into the mode of goodness. And then that way be compassionate for others and not dislike them or be angry with them, but dislike the modes of nature.
Hate the sin and not the sinner. Yeah, that's good. That also can be expanded to try to put ourselves in the other person's situation to find that compassion. Certainly want to give it time. It's good to chant. A good session of sadhana can be very good for helping alleviate hard feelings. And trying to see the other person's point of view. I mean, that's a dynamic, positive, constructive thing one can do in those situations. Other comments? Yes, Stephanie?
I have a question. When you, this sentence here from the purport is, I guess,
as far as those things are concerned, in personal affairs, we should take, I care for them, but in the case of their
devotees,
then we should take strong action. So I was wondering, this made me think of the pastime of where Rupa and Sanatana Goswami were approached by like a pundit. They were like, oh, I was trying to like defeat everybody, you know, and they're like, oh, whatever, we don't want to debate with you. He just signed a paper. When Jiva Goswami found out, he got so upset and just debated them, just so Rupa and Sanatana Goswami wouldn't be blasphemy. But when then Rupa and Sanatana Goswami found out, they got mad at Jiva Goswami and said, why did you do this? It was just because of your false ego. Like, his original intention was just he didn't want to hear the devotees being blasphemed, but then he got chastised.
Yes.
So then in what situations is it appropriate for us to defend the devotees in such a way, and how can we know, like, see if it's coming from a false ego or if we were truly just trying to defend the devotees?
Yeah, this is applied Krishna consciousness. So can we, I mean, there's more to that pastime also. You know, Jiva was banned from Vrindavan by Rupa. And then on Radhastami, Sanatana said to Rupa, you should let him back in now because it's Radhastami and you should be kind to all Jivas. So their point in wanting to sign this Digvijay Pandit's paper was that it's not important for devotees to engage in debate. We don't measure our spiritual advancement by how well we can debate with somebody. Because debate, like Lord Chaitanya would do, he would argue one side of an issue, defeat everybody, and then he'd take the other side and go back and defeat them again. So debate is an art in and of itself. It is not the same as the arts of devotion. So the question is, are we becoming defensive like animalistic? If our anger is out of control, that is a sign that our ego is involved. If our anger is, if we can turn it off and on and use it when we need to, that is something we can dovetail in Krishna's service. You understand? If we have lost control of our anger, then that is something we can't really offer to Krishna. Okay. So, for the betterment of Jiva Goswami, for his education, to help emphasize this point, because he was the greatest philosopher among the six Goswamis, there are some undertones of this in his uncle, Srupa and Sanatan, making such a strong statement for him. So, our cases tend to be more tangible, like if somebody is exploiting the devotees, or that time when the devotees were being, the guests, the organizers were trying to pull the devotees into the audience to dance, and they were grabbing their clothes, and Prabhupada swung the kartals like nunchucks. Remember that? Yeah, in front of thousands of people. So these are examples. That anger was there. The whole Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada gave the example, you know, the Bhagavad Gita. You have to be angry to fight. So Krishna was exhorting Arjuna, get angry, you know, fight, don't just acquiesce. So, but to do it in such a way that it was just done for Krishna. So that's one way to subjectively measure. If we're controlling our anger, that's righteous. You know, we can pull it out and say, yes, this has really upset me, because I feel like you're blaspheming the devotees. This happens all too often. See, when we're hearing criticism of other devotees, we fail to get angry about it. We ought to get angry. Or have some reaction. Like Jayananda Prabhu was famous. He would just cover his ears and go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare. Or we can just leave. Or you could say something nice about that person. That's even more powerful and more practical. Somebody saying, oh, this person did this. Well, it's true, but he does really good service in this way, or he's done this in the past. Okay. So one way or another, we should be able to respond with self-control. So in the Gita it says, Trivedham narakasetam dwaram nasanam atmanam kama krodha tatha lobhas tepiyantitaram vitam. Three gates to hell. Lust, and then lust's younger brother, anger, and greed. Yeah. So these three things lead to a hellish life. So if we're uncontrollably angered all the time, or by some situation, then we know the fault is in us. Even if we can't extinguish it right away, we should not act on it. But if we're angry at the university for doing something to Krishna Lunch, you know, and it upsets us, it makes us angry, then we should try to respond to it in a way. But if we go in and get angry with them, it's not going to help.